When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the Date Night Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Russell, and with me is my co-host, Ashley Russell.
Hey, everyone.
You know, this is our first time recording in 2021, and when we decided to take a break back in December, things were looking pretty bleak for theatrical exhibition. I mean, things were looking kind of bleak in general.
It was. Even up until, like, summertime, I was like, because all the movies were still getting pushed back.
Yeah.
And then now we're going to get, like, an influx.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of the calendar was sort of like waiting for Bond to reopen. And so like when Bond picked October, I think a lot of other movies picked that month. You know, things were kind of slowly opening back up over the summer. It's been kind of hit or miss. I mean, there's been a couple hits. We had the, you know, Shang-Chi.
Oh, that was a great movie. Which was a nice big hit. Well, but I think that's what, you know, the market was waiting for. I mean, honestly, like, Marvel puts butts in the seats, right? Like, they get people to actually go to the theaters and you know, get people to experience the theatrical release. So everything was being released at home. Even, you know, Wonder Woman was released at home.
Yeah.
But now,
Pretty much every Warner Brothers movie, they have this thing where it goes simultaneous theaters and HBO Max.
Yeah, but they needed something like Shang-Chi.
Like theaters only.
Theaters only, you know, and Marvel, I think, was the only one that could get people to go back to the theater and get it going again. And I'm glad that they did.
And I mean, well, typically, you know, prior to the pandemic, I mean, the window was between like 75 to 90 days.
Yeah.
A movie had to be in theaters before it could go to streaming and on down the line. Most typically... On average, most movies make the bulk of their money in theaters within the first month.
Yes.
So for, you know, those subsequent months, it's kind of just hanging around on a couple screens, making a couple bucks. And I think that's that time frame that studios are looking to consolidate.
Yeah.
That period where, like, they're not making a whole lot of money on it. You know, just kind of, like, shoot it on down the pipe. Yeah, I mean, the studios, they are finally starting to release some of their bigger movies. And yeah, so for months, like, theaters were operating with very little product, if they were even operating at all. And, you know, our whole show, it's all about movies that are playing in theaters.
Yeah.
You know, we go out, we watch a movie, we come back here, we get on the mic, we talk about it, and that's the show, pretty much. So yeah, we took a break really out of necessity because nothing was getting released. And, you know, in that time, we actually finished and released our own movie. It's called Tiny Dancers, which is now streaming on Amazon Prime. If you like raunchy, low-budget comedies like Clerks or The Foot Fist Way, definitely check out Tiny Dancers. And so on our last episode, we said we were going to kind of take a break and come back whenever the next Bond movie finally got released, which at the time was supposed to be in April.
Yeah.
And so that, like, this is like one of the most delayed movies of all time.
Well,
I think next to Top Gun.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm like, Top Gun is probably the first.
By the time Top Gun comes out, will anyone care anymore? It's kind of been like torturous, like watching these previews.
I know.
For years.
It's been what, 3 years now? 2 years now?
I was hyped for this a year ago. I mean,
but they keep
now,
pushing it back and keep pushing it back. It's like, well, okay, is it a dud?
No,
you know?
I think the studio just wants optimal conditions for the movie because I think they believe it can perform really well. And right now, you know, we still have this Delta variant that kind of like screwed everything up this past summer.
Yeah.
And I would have put 50-50 odds on No Time to Die getting delayed again because of this whole Delta thing, which thankfully didn't happen.
And we're slowly but surely getting back. I mean, the last time we went to the movie theater and it was pretty packed.
Yeah. I mean, well, like, you know, just a week ago, like Venom came out and opened to like 90 million. And whereas, like, this movie, this past weekend, made, like, $56 million, which, you know, pre-pandemic isn't great. I mean, now everything's kind of relative. I don't know. I mean, it seems like people, you know, they come out for superhero movies. They come out for comic book stuff, and that's
what it seems like. Because
that's what it was like before. Now it's even more stark.
Yeah.
And I think James Bond kind of skews older. So, and I think older folks are still the most reluctant to come out to theaters.
Yeah.
So,
I would say Top Gun would be the same way.
That might be why they pushed it. Mm-hmm. Also, yeah, that movie would definitely skew older. But yeah, so today we are here to talk about No Time to Die. It's the 25th film in the James Bond series, and it's the last to star Daniel Craig in the role. And this movie has an 84% on Rotten Tomatoes, and you know, like I said earlier, it opened this past weekend to about 56 million, which I mean, is
that's high in Rotten Tomatoes.
The score, yeah, critics dig it.
Interesting.
It's a well reviewed movie. I think the best reviewed is Skyfall of the Daniel Craig movies. I think Venom 2 is fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
So who knows? Who knows what's real?
I just think critics maybe just would be like, you know, they really wanted
to. We need to get out. Well, we need to get out of the house.
Well, and they realize how important maybe they are to getting folks to go to the theater.
Yeah, there might be some pressure.
Little lenient on their reviews.
Sure. I mean, like Free Guy with Ryan Reynolds, like that got rave reviews. And
That was okay.
So yeah, this movie, you know, it opened this past weekend, and the last James Bond film was Spectre, which was 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest gaps in the franchise. I mean, we're like the entire Trump administration occurred between the last two Bond films.
Oh gosh, we're not going to Trump administration right now.
That just shows you like how much the world has changed between these Bond films.
I know.
Six years. But before we talk about No Time to Die, why don't we just talk real briefly about our prior experience with this franchise? Are you a fan of the series? And do you have a favorite James Bond film?
I mean, honestly, I've seen them all, but they don't leave an impression.
You've seen all 25?
Well, not all of them. All of Daniel Craig's.
Have you seen any other Bonds? Like
no.
Pierce Brosnan, Sean Connery?
No.
So you've only seen the Daniel Craig movies?
Yeah. But the only one that really stood out to me was Skyfall.
Okay.
That's the only one I really remember.
That's the one where you got Javier Bardem as the villain.
Good villain.
Pretty awesome villain.
What makes the Bond movies good, or are the good villains? So you have...
It's a critical ingredient.
Javier, and then you've got the Spectre villain. What's his name?
Christoph Waltz.
Amazing.
Well, yeah, he appeared in Spectre.
Yeah.
We saw Spectre together. Did you enjoy Spectre?
I don't remember it. I'm honest. Like, I don't remember it.
It's not great. It's not great.
I don't remember a lot of it. I mean, maybe if I saw it again before you asked me this question, I probably would have done a little research and kind of peaked my memory.
Well, I guess the point is, like,
it's been 6 years ago.
You had no desire to really, like, go back and revisit them, even in the lead up to No Time to Die. Interesting. Because I rewatched.
I prefer the Mission Impossible movies.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, they're very similar.
They're on the same level, yeah.
The Bond movies are always the same. There's always two girls, one good, one bad, and one turns on Bond, and, you know, I mean, it's
sure.
The same, like, cookie-cutter layout.
Definitely a formula. I mean, you could say the Bond movies kind of set the template for, like, the modern espionage movie.
Yeah, they did.
For sure. I mean, they go back to the 60s.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty incredible.
But maybe it's, you know, No Time to Die. I mean, like, it's a good time to die.
I mean, James Bond will be back with another actor, for sure. Like, the franchise isn't dead.
Well, I think there's going to be another 007, which I think is going to be a lady.
You think they're going to have a lady, James Bond?
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that based on this film?
Mm-hmm. But based on what the world wants right now. I think the world doesn't need another white English dude playing
James Bond. Well, I think James Bond is always going to be British.
You can... Idris Elba.
Sure. I mean, he's not a lady.
I don't care. But
no, Idris Elba would be my top choice.
Yeah, I mean, bringing some diversity to this role for the lead, whether it be a female, whether it be African-American male. Like, I want to see something different.
Idris Elba, I think, is a top of a lot of people's list. I don't know.
He would be fantastic.
Of course he would. They'll start with a clean slate. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, they might carry over, like, you know, Ralph Fiennes or Q. story.
What about you? What is your favorite?
Well, yeah, my introduction to James Bond was in 95 with GoldenEye. And I think I was like 13 at the time, and I saw that in theaters, and that made a big impression on me. I think that movie still holds up. And GoldenEye is a good example of like balancing like the silly with the serious.
Yeah.
And these current Daniel Craig movies have gotten very serious. And
so serious. But I think that's
why because, so serious.
But I think that's because Daniel Craig is a serious actor. Like, I don't think he can pull off like
part of it.
The comedic timing.
Also, the Bond films, they take their cues from whatever is kind of trending in popular culture at the time. And so, like, the early Daniel Craig movies, they were kind of molded after Bourne movies. And then the later Daniel Craig movies start to feel more like Christopher Nolan comic book films. And especially, like, Skyfall feels like it's definitely inspired by The Dark Knight, where you got, like, Javier Bardem, like, as the Joker, essentially. And that's how it's always been. When Star Wars was popular, they crank out Moonraker, where Bond goes to space. So, like, that's kind of how the series
really?
Has... Yeah, absolutely. That's how Bond the series has stayed alive.
Really?
Check out Moonraker.
That's a movie?
It's called Moonraker. Check it out.
I don't think
Or
so.
Don't.
Yeah. No. That's not... No.
Out of, like, the 25 Bond films, I think I've seen maybe, like, 15 or 16... my gap is with the Roger Moore movies in the 70s. There's one or two Sean Connery's I haven't seen. But everything like from the Timothy Dalton era on, I'm caught up with. And so GoldenEye I love. And unfortunately, like Pierce Brosnan, his movies went downhill immediately. Like GoldenEye was like it. Like each movie got a little bit worse. And so like bottoming out with Die Another Day with Halle Berry. So there's like an invisible car. It's getting real silly. So yeah, then Daniel Craig reboots it. And I was one of those people, like I wasn't totally blown away by Casino Royale. A lot of people consider that the best Bond movie. And for me, it's pretty good. I think Eva Green takes it up a notch.
Yeah.
She's one of the best Bond girls.
Well, you love Eva Green.
Who doesn't? She's one of the best Bond girls, I think, that the series has had. But the movie itself is kind of weirdly paced. It feels like three movies to me, but it's pretty good. It's a good introduction to Daniel Craig. And then he, afterwards we get Quantum of Solace, which is just garbage, just incoherent garbage. And so like when I sat down to watch Skyfall, I'm pretty jaded on this series. I'm like, I mean, these movies are mostly mediocre. Like they haven't like hit it out of the park in a while. And then Skyfall like totally changed my conception of the series. And it's like, if a 50-year-old franchise can crank out a movie like Skyfall, there's still
hope.
Plenty of gas in this tank. So yeah, Skyfall just blew me away. That movie, I've seen it a number of times. It always holds up for me. Skyfall is like an ideal Bond experience. Like I would take Skyfall over any Mission Impossible movie. But that's the only Bond movie that I would take over Mission Impossible. And then, Spectre was kind of a disappointment. You got, like, four good scenes and a whole bunch of boring nonsense.
Well, yeah. I mean, the only good thing about Spectre was
Christoph Waltz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's always
He was okay. He was okay. I mean, their depiction of Blofeld where, like, they try and tie in this backstory between Bond and Blofeld. Like, they knew each other as kids.
Yeah.
Is dumb. Like, I don't think we need that. Like, we don't need to reach back into, like, Bond's childhood to, like, give him a connection to this villain. Just make him, like, a charismatic, insane villain who has to be stopped.
There you go.
He doesn't need to be the author of James Bond's pain. And Blofeld was a villain going back to the Sean Connery days.
Well, and he starts out as the villain in this movie, in the No Time to Die movie, the current one.
Well, Spectre ends with him being captured and imprisoned.
Yeah. But in the beginning of No Time to Die, like he is still calling the shots, and we find out later how.
But he's doing it. He's doing it from prison.
He's doing it from prison, and then then his plan gets hijacked by Rami Malek.
So yeah, let's talk about it, and we'll keep spoilers light before we take a break. But I mean, there will be some light spoilers. So if you want to stay totally clean, watch the film and then come back to this. But this movie. It basically has like a 30-minute cold open.
Yeah.
Right before we even get to the title. All Bond movies, they have like a spectacular cold open before the credits. Like a big set piece. A lot of Bond movies, it's the highlight of the film. And the film is kind of downhill from there. But this is a pretty solid, like, opening 30 minutes. I would say we get kind of a flashback of sorts where we see young Madeline Swan. She witnesses her mother's death.
Yep.
By a character named Lucifer Safin. The way they spell his name, like, clearly they are going for Lucifer.
Yeah.
But they're spelling it all weird.
Yeah.
But we'll call him Safin.
Yeah.
And so he's there to kill her dad, who we know as Mr. White, a.k.a. the Pale King. He's a guy who killed himself in the previous film, Spectre. He's been in, like, all the movies.
Yeah.
Except for Skyfall. And just another little note on why Skyfall is great. Skyfall is the only film in the Daniel Craig series that doesn't reference Vesper Lynd. It doesn't reference Spectre or Mr. White. Skyfall is its totally own standalone Bond adventure. All the other Bond movies are doing this, like, interconnected bullshit.
So you have to watch one to understand the
Pretty much. Yeah. Skyfall works totally on its own, independent. That's how pretty much all the previous films were. They were their standalone adventures. They're not like, you know, like a Bond cinematic universe.
Yeah.
So yeah, we get this flashback and Safin, you know, he's wearing, like, this creepy white mask.
Yep.
It's kind of like a horror, like, slasher opening in a way. It has a horror vibe.
It has a
which
horror
I dug.
Vibe, yeah. He ends up finding her and she's running and she gets under the, she falls into the lake that's behind the house that is frozen over.
And does he help her out?
He helps her out.
Okay.
He saves her.
Right.
For a reason we don't know until later in the movie.
But this prologue, it establishes that, like, Madeline and Safin, they have this shared history.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, then after that, we cut forward to right after the events of Spectre, where Madeline and James Bond, they're just kind of having a nice vacation in Italy.
Yep.
Is Bond retired?
Yeah. At this point, he was retired.
Because we catch up with him again, where he's, like, vacationing in Jamaica, and he's, like, retired again. So he's having, like, multiple vacations in this picture.
Well, no, I think he leaves. He leaves Madeline.
Well, yeah, we'll get
and
into
then
that. I'm just
goes
saying
to Jamaica, and so it's one continuous.
But there's a 5-year gap,
yeah,
in between Italy and Jamaica.
But
like
he's
when he leaves
retired there, through all that.
He's doing his thing in Italy. You know, he and Madeline, you know, they seem to be in love, and they're just enjoying their time together in beautiful Italy. And then for some reason, he goes to visit Vesper Lynd's grave.
Well, I think that's the whole reason why they went there. was for him to get some kind of closure.
Which is weird. 5 movies in.
I know.
There should be closure. There should be closure. I don't know why he's going to her fucking tomb.
maybe because that was, you know, he loved her.
Sure.
And maybe he only loved 2 women and it was her and then it's Madeline.
I thought the whole Vesper thing was closed out after Quantum. Like Quantum was like his whole revenge mission for the people responsible for Vesper's death. After Quantum, let's close it out. I mean, he's with another lady. He's been with multiple women.
Yeah.
Like, we should be moved on. That's just my opinion. And, I mean, Ava Green. I mean, I get it. Ava Green.
Hard one to get over.
Hard to move on from, but gotta do it.
I mean, he's Bond, though. He's got multiple, you know, lovely ladies coming at him. But then there's a bomb that's in the grave.
Yeah, they get ambushed. They get ambushed by, like, Spectre assassins.
Yes.
Pretty much. And there's a big chase scene, a pretty spectacular scene. Like, they're being chased around Italy. They're, like, jumping off a bridge.
Yeah, with Right.
Great stunt work.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, most of this, like a shot on film, it looks really practical. This is all good looking stuff. And so he thinks that Madeline double crossed him.
Yes.
Like led the assassins to him. And so he just dumps her at a train station.
And says goodbye.
Yep. Never want to see you again. And she looks upset.
I mean, you know, we'll find out why later.
I thought Lea Seydoux, who plays Madeline, I thought she was great in this.
She's good.
And she was one of the bright spots in Spectre also.
Yeah.
She's really solid. She fits into this series really well, I think.
She does.
So yeah, after that we cut to the title sequence where we got Billie Eilish singing just an upbeat, infectious pop tune on the soundtrack. Like something you want to tap your toes to, right?
You're being facetious, right?
No, it's very, very mournful, yeah, and sad. So yeah, so that happens. Then we pick up 5 years later, and there's an MI6 scientist who has created a bioweapon that's basically an infectious virus made up of nanobots. is that correct?
Not really. So it is nanobots, yes, but it's not like an infectious virus.
Well, you can program it. A programmable virus.
It is infectious to the people that you program the DNA into.
Right.
So that's... And then
it's a bioweapon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can be used as a bioweapon.
MI6 created it, and then...
This scientist gets kidnapped in an early scene, right?
He does get kidnapped, but he's all in it. Like, Spectre comes in, kills all the scientists in there.
Why did they have to do the big elaborate thing if this scientist is part of it? Couldn't he just join them without, like, the big elaborate... I guess they had to steal the...
They had to make it look like he was under, you know...
But yeah, this scientist is crooked.
Very, very crooked. And so, but what Spectre doesn't know is the scientist is working with Rami Malek. And so right before the Spectre folks come into the lab, Rami Malek calls him Staffan. Okay. All right. Yep. So Staffan... calls him and says they're on their way, they're coming. And then that's when he downloads all of the Spectre DNA versus James Bond DNA. And that's where they get the switch.
Because he wants to sabotage Blofeld.
Yes.
Staffan is after Blofeld.
Yes.
Do we know why that is? Staffan just wants ultimate power and control?
I think he wanted a way to...
Like, what?
Take over the Spectre resources, I think it was. Because pretty much all of the Spectre folks...
To what end?
Switch to...
Like, global domination sort of deal?
Yeah, but I don't know.
It's an interesting idea,
really,
like...
his, like, motive.
It's an interesting idea, like a Bond supervillain targeting another Bond supervillain. That's interesting.
But I don't think his motive was world domination. I think his motive was... to kill as many people in a fast amount of time as possible.
To create like a new world order?
Yeah.
Okay. See, he's a real sicko.
He wants to be king of the world, and he feels like this is how you do it.
Yeah, I would say like Rami Malek and just the way this character is written and performed is one of the weaker elements of this film.
Yeah.
Staffan is not a strong villain. We'll say up front.
No. Like, I don't like...
I mean, I would say the weakest of the Daniel Craig series, except for Quantum of Solace, whoever that villain was.
I don't like his backstory. So he was poisoned by Madeline's dad, or his whole family.
Mr. White.
Was poisoned by Madeline's dad. Do we know why?
That I don't even think I caught that he was poisoned by Madeline's dad. So no, I don't know why.
Well, yeah, his whole family was.
Okay.
And that's how he got disfigured.
Okay, I don't even think I caught that. At one point, he goes on... He has, like, two... First off, he's barely in this.
Yeah. But
the scenes he's in this, it's monologuing.
Underwhelming.
He's like, just sitting and talking.
And monotone.
Yeah. He has a couple of monologues, and I kind of zoned out, I think. So I didn't even, catch his backstory.
Which is a shame, because I think this is, like, the movie right after he just got his Oscar.
Of course. Yeah. I mean,
and, like, why go this way?
Playing a Bond villain... I mean, the last three Bond villains have been Oscar winners. I mean, for me, like, Javier Bardem's entrance in Skyfall, he doesn't appear until midway in the film.
Yeah.
But when he enters, he comes down this elevator, he slowly walks up to Bond, and he's having, like, a weird monologue about rats eating each other. It's all done in one take. It is an unforgettable entrance.
Yeah.
And, like, from that point on, like, Javier Bardem is in control of the story, and the movie gets even better. And, like, that's a great Bond villain. And yeah, Rami Malek doesn't have any moments like that. I mean, the opening scene where he's masked, that's as good as it gets. That's as creepy as he gets.
And like, I don't even know how he got all his money. There's just a lot of gaps in this movie that I wish they would have.
And the movie's 2 hours and 45 minutes.
I know.
So they shouldn't be any gaps.
They missed a lot of... I mean, maybe instead of focusing so much on the CIA trying to recruit Bond... to go to Cuba to find the doctor. I mean, maybe, you know, let's go to the backstory, or let's have some more of the backstory of why
this villain is doing this.
Is so crazy, and, you know, maybe a flashback or something that we could understand.
Yeah, I found his motivations confusing. I found his actions to be baffling, and just the performance overall to be underwhelming. And but I like Rami Malek.
I mean, I do. I love
that's not a knock on Rami Malek. Yeah. I mean, he's doing what he can with this material. But yeah, this is a weak Bond villain. But yeah, I mean, like, the thrust of the movie is, like, you know, Bond, he gets recruited to track down this scientist, this mm-hmm. MI6 scientist. And, you know, he's, of course, reluctant because he's retired.
He's retired. He doesn't want to get involved. He's
just sailing around in Jamaica. And along the way, we meet Nomi, who's played by Lashana Lynch. And she's replaced him as the new 007.
Yeah.
And I thought she was pretty good in this.
I thought she was great in this.
I thought all the Bond women.
Yeah.
You know, Lashana Lynch, Leah Seydoux, and Ana de Armas,
yeah.
who we meet later. She just has, like, one or two scenes.
Well, yeah, I was about to say, like, she's only...
But she nearly steals those scenes. Yeah. She's really good. So, like, yeah, that's, you know, the movie's really lacking in the villain department, but it's great in the Bond girl department.
Yeah.
All these women are great. So why don't we take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get more heavily into spoilers for No Time to Die. All right, we're back, and we're going to get more into spoilers for this film. But yeah, you know, at one point, Bond, he meets up with Felix Leiter, who's played by Jeffrey Wright,
yep.
who's great. This guy has an associate named Logan Ash.
Yes.
And this guy is played by Billy Magnussen. And this guy turns out to be bad.
Yeah.
And he ends up killing Felix Leiter.
He does.
So that raises the stakes a little bit.
Yeah, he is working for
Stefan. Christoph Waltz, he does have, like, a one scene cameo here, and it's a pretty strong mm-hmm. scene. It's frustrating because, like, his one scene is better than any of Rami Malek's scenes.
I know, it's amazing. and he gets killed.
Well, yeah, and let's kind of explain that, because, like, when I watched it, I was a little confused. But basically, like, Madeline, she's like a therapist, I think.
Yeah, she's a psychotherapist.
One of her clients is Safin,
as well as Christoph Waltz.
She's still in contact with Christoph Waltz.
He's the only therapist he talks to.
Right.
He won't talk to anybody else but her.
And so, like, Safin kind of gets in a room with her, and he convinces her to kill
Blofeld. Threatens her, her family.
doesn't like talk her gently into mm-mm. it.
And so what Stefan.
There's no T.
Safin.
S-A-F-I-N.
Safin. Okay. What Safin just wants her to spray the stuff on her hands.
Yeah.
And then what she does is she touches Bond before they go in. And Bond has no idea. I think so. She's like, I can't do this. And touches Bond. So Bond end up does it. She knows what's going on.
And so, yeah, Bond has the nanobots on him.
Yep.
And so, like, at one point, you know, he's talking to Christoph Waltz. Christoph Waltz pisses him off, and he chokes him.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other agents around, like, simmer down. And, you know, he backs off, he calms down. And then they realize, you know, they look at Blofeld, and Blofeld is dead.
He's dead. Yeah.
From the nanobots.
But Blofeld also told him, I think the reason why he got mad was because pretty much told him that Madeline was not working with him, that she was innocent, and that he sent her away for nothing.
Yeah, Bond clearly has a soft spot with Madeline.
Avi.
We find out why, and just like a few scenes later, when he's at her house, and it turns out she has a 5-year-old kid.
She's got a daughter.
And, yeah, 5 years old, has blue eyes, and she tells Bond, it's not yours? But, don't worry, it's not yours.
Yeah, but...
Seems like it could be his.
Yeah, but it's his. He knows it. He sees the eyes. He knows that the daughter is his.
I feel kind of dumb when she said that, don't worry, it's not yours. As an audience member, I'm like, okay. It's not his. All right.
Because the Bonds never had kids.
Exactly. Yeah. Bond movies have never moved into that territory.
Mm-mm.
which is interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a new area. I mean, the movie goes into another area that Bond movies have never gone into later at the end. So, like, after he meets his kid, there's a pretty cool car chase.
Yeah.
And this is one of the action highlights. And because the kid is in the car, it feels a little more intense.
There's a little bit more at stake.
And yeah, it's a bunch of like Range Rovers, you know, like tracking him into the forest.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Cars are flipping. It's good stuff. And it culminates with like one of my favorite scenes in the movie where Logan Ash is like trapped under a car.
Oh, yeah.
And the only thing like holding the car up is like a little tree.
Yeah.
And then Bond just like pushes it on top of him, crushing him. Which is a pretty terrible death.
Yeah.
And there's a couple moments throughout here where Bond is pretty cold-blooded and the way he just straight up murders folks.
Well, I mean, I think...
Like Bond has kind of snapped.
Well, especially at the end. Well, now because he's got something to fight for.
Yeah, definitely at the end also, between him and Safin.
Yeah.
Very cold-blooded.
I mean, you know, but he's got something to fight for now. He's got...
Oh, yeah. No, it's justified. You're not going to see, like, a Marvel hero just casually, like, push a car on top of someone and walk away. It is just... Yeah, it's...
Well, Deadpool.
I'm talking the Avengers. Oh, any of the Avengers just casually crush a man? But no, I mean, I enjoyed it. I mean, it was a good moment. And so, yeah, after that, we end up and Safin's... improbably complex villain hideout.
Yeah.
Where it's like a nanobot factory or something.
How did nobody like realize that this was all going on with all the workers? Where are the workers like living? Like there's...
Everything with Safin is very disappointing and very like undercooked. But
his dad, I think, was a botanist and specialized in poisonous plants.
Sure.
And so he figured out, he was cultivating some poison plants up at the top and then in the river thing down below.
Applied it to nanobots. Yeah. You get an MI6 scientist involved.
Well, and you put it in the water stream.
And so, yeah, what is his goal is to like infect people.
Millions.
And just kill a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
Who's he targeting? Republicans? Do we know who he's targeting?
We don't know who he's targeting. He's just targeting random people with certain, I guess, DNA.
I'd be interested in like is it random or are we targeting specific folks?
Right? I don't know. Like, see, that's another thing. Like, there were so many gaps in like the motivation of the villain and why he's doing this. I mean, outside of his parents being murdered. He gets revenge in the beginning where he murders her parents, like, or her mom. Like,
yeah, it's
I don't understand.
It's real undercooked. So like he and Bond, they have like a fist fight.
They have a big fight at the end. But Remy or Safin.
Safin. Yep.
Safin.
No.
No tea. Safin. He created the nanobots targeted on Madeline and Madeline's DNA and the daughter's DNA.
Was Safin in love with Madeline?
I think he wanted them for his family.
Okay. Because, yeah, at one point he's trying to, like, bring the kid along.
Yeah.
It's like, if you want to leave, then leave. And the kid just leaves.
And runs away. And so, yeah, I mean, I think he wants a family. I think, you know.
And if they won't be his family, then they should die.
Exactly.
Sure.
But when they were fighting and Safin knew that it was the end for him, he broke the vial with the blood and the nanobites and infected Bond. So he would never be able to touch his... mother, he would never be able to touch the love of his life or his child again, yeah. Or they die.
Pretty messed up. And while this is going on, there are rockets heading to the island.
Yeah, so they're trying to destroy the island because this island is full of this like nanobots. It's full of all of this bad stuff. So they're trying to destroy.
They're trying to wipe out like the nanobot factory.
But in order to do that,
so it doesn't spread.
Yeah,
yeah.
But in order to do that, you had to open the missile doors to get inside the island to blow it up. So he was going back and forth, and then Remy comes in, and this is what all happens. So Remy closes the doors again, and then they fight.
Then he gets infected.
And then he gets infected, and then he has to go back upstairs and open the door, and it's just too late because the rockets are already coming.
Bond, like, point blank, just, like, shoots him in the head.
Yeah.
He doesn't even look at him.
No.
He does.
No.
Bond realizes he's infected.
Yeah.
And just bam, bam, bam. Yeah. Dead. So.
And so, I mean, and this is getting to, I guess, the big spoiler where he dies.
Bond, yeah, he realizes, you know, he's infected. He's screwed. You know, he doesn't have a chance at a good life, I guess.
And so, not the life that he wants.
And so he just stays on the island while the rockets come, and he's blown to kingdom come.
Yeah, and they've never killed a Bond character in the past.
No.
I called it. I was like, oh, he's going to die this time. And you're like, well, I've never done that. He'll probably just retire.
Well, going into it, I read reviews like, you know, it's has a very emotional ending. And like, that's not something you like apply to a Bond film. Like, Bond movies end with him murdering the villain, ending up on the beach with a Bond girl, yeah, and like fade to black. Like, that's how they usually end. And so an emotional Bond film would indicate like somebody major dies.
Yeah.
And, you know, Daniel Craig, he's done five of these.
He's
been pretty vocal. He doesn't want to do this anymore.
About getting out of these.
So, yeah. So I knew movies. It was a possibility. Like, based on what I'd read, like, that was definitely a possibility. It's, yeah, it's never been done before. Mm-mm. And, yeah, I think they did a good job. They did a tasteful job, and it does conjure some emotions.
Yeah.
So there is definitely like a bittersweet kind of like tragic quality to it. And it's a solid ending. I guess I have mixed feelings on it because it's not what you expect from a Bond movie. It's like killing Superman. Like,
they did that and they brought it back.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, no matter what, like, Bond's going to be coming back in some form.
Yeah. It's just going to be somebody else.
I mean,
I guess it's still too big of a franchise to let it die.
They'll keep going.
Again,
Skyfall. Like, I mean, if you can get these movies up to anywhere close to that level, like, I mean, this is a series worth continuing.
Well, there you go.
Well, again, there's a little scene amongst, like, the 00 branch where, like, they have, like, a drink. They toast to him.
Yep.
Nice little moment. And then, like, the final scene is Madeline riding around in the car with her kid, telling her kid about Bond.
Yeah. Let me tell you a story.
And that's the movie.
That's the movie. Yeah.
That's No Time to Die. You know, we saw this in IMAX. A couple scenes were, I think, formatted for IMAX. It was really just like the opening scene, from what I remember, where it was like full screen.
Yeah.
Most of it was like kind of like matted letterbox. That was another nice thing about Skyfall. If you saw it in IMAX, the whole movie was in IMAX.
The whole
movie took up the IMAX screen. It's rare when it comes together that well. So, what grade would you give this?
I would give it probably B-.
Okay. I'll give it like a B+, I think.
Yeah.
For me, I guess this is like kind of on the level of like Casino Royale. And that's a movie like that I like a lot. I don't quite love it. I wouldn't say Casino Royale is great, but it's a solid Bond movie. And I think this is a solid Bond movie. There's some great action. It's too long.
Way too long.
Like, I'm definitely checking my watch in the last hour and a half. I'm definitely checking my watch. And, I mean, I say that, like, I think it's well-paced. There's just...
Well, yeah, it didn't feel...
Like, I was still in it. Like, I didn't check out. Like, even, like, towards the end.
3 hours long.
Yeah, even that third hour, like, I was still with it. I didn't check out. So, like, you know, I give it credit for that. The villain was weak, and...
That's why I gave it a B-.
Yeah, like Rami Malek, that was a disappointment. And, you know, if I was, like, in charge of steering this series in the future, I would, like, go for a little more levity. Not quite so serious.
Yeah.
These movies should be fun and escapist and, you know, shorter on the runtime.
There you go.
Like, and when I say levity, I don't mean jokes. Like, I don't need people wisecracking. Just moments. You lighten things up a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, things don't feel so heavy. For like a couple of scenes, maybe.
That's what I love about Mission Impossible, because Mission Impossible, there are some like comedic moments in there that you just want to like laugh and enjoy.
The vibe is mostly
serious.
Yeah, the vibe is mostly fun
yeah.
in Mission Impossible. And yeah, I mean, like, this movie opens with a Billie Eilish song, like, which when I'm watching, I'm like, oh, this is awfully downbeat for a Bond adventure. But in hindsight, it's kind of the, like, perfect way
it
to
is, yeah.
set the tone.
Yeah.
Like, you're watching a funeral march.
Oh, gosh.
So, okay, so, yeah, is it a good date movie?
I think so. I think Bonds are good date movies.
Yeah.
It's got romance. It's got action. It's got everything that...
I don't think you and your date will be too bored.
No.
Even though it is too long. It's a Bond movie. It's worth seeing on the big screen. So...
That's it.
That's No Time to Die, directed by Cary Fukunaga. You can find more episodes at anchor.fm/moviedatenight, as well as on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, where you can rate and review. Check out our feature film, Tiny Dancers. It's now streaming on Prime Video. We are on Twitter at DNMoviePodcast, and you can also email us at datenightmoviepodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Ashley.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.